Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSB Magazine. You're listening to a new The Changemaking Podcast with Chloe Mestoghi. Each episode will introduce an area of technology that needs work and highlight the changemakers working on it. Join Chloe and guests as they tap into their passion about equity and rights for all. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Changemaking Podcast. With me, I have an incredible guest to have for my first episode ever, which is Eva Galperin. Thank you so much for being here, Eva, and I'm so excited to share a little bit about and having actually more of this open conversation about stalkerware and the issues of stalkerware. If those that are not aware of Eva, she is the Director of Cybersecurity at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, EFF, also head of EFF's Threat Lab, and also as a security researcher. But most importantly for today's podcast is to take away the one thing that she has been doing and has been fighting to make sure that there is protection. And that would be one of the founding members of the Coalition Against Stalkerware. Eva, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. So Eva, do you mind sharing a little bit of your journey into creating the Coalition Against Stalkerware?
Well, to begin with, so the coalitions don't happen overnight, but probably you could say that it started with the work that I was doing tracking APTs. So there I was traveling all over the world and working on the sort of protection of journalists and activists against nation state actors and nation state aligned actors who are angry about their activism and journalism. And it turned out that the guy that I was doing most of my research with was a serial rapist. And in early 2018, he was outed. And I read an article that was an interview with one of his survivors, and she was exceptionally terrified. And so were the other people who were speaking out against him in his home country of New Zealand. And the thing that really struck me was that they were all very scared that he was going to hack their phones or hack their computers and, you know, install spyware on them, because apparently this was something that he had threatened to do. So I got really angry and I tweeted that if you were a woman who had been sexually assaulted by a hacker and you wanted to have, you know, sort of somebody do a forensic analysis of your device, that you could get in touch with me and I would make sure that happened. 10,000 retweets later, I had accidentally started a project. And I was hearing from dozens of people a day. And again, not just women, also men, also, you know, non-binary people in all kinds of situations with all kinds of problems. And mostly what I learned was that not a lot of work had been done on stalkerware at that time. I did a little bit of research into how well AV companies were detecting stalkerware for your Android phone or your Windows device. And the answer was that they were not doing a very good job. And part of this was because AV companies were sort of skittish about classifying stalkerware as malware or as malicious, because they felt that there were some legitimate uses for it. And if there were some legitimate uses, then classifying it as malicious could, you know, open them up to some problems. So what I did was I went to the AV companies and I said that this is bullshit. There is actually no legitimate use case for software which lives on somebody else's device, which gives you all of the information from somebody else's device, and which deliberately hides to leave the person using the device with the impression that they are not being watched. The thing that distinguishes stalkerware from, say, your kid tracking apps or the app that you might use in order to keep track of an elderly parent with dementia or anything like that is consent. And these apps deliberately get around consent. And the pushback that I got on that was, well, if you take a look at these apps, you can see that for the most part, in order to install them, you need to have physical access to the device and you need to have the username and password for the device. And if you have all three of these things, then surely that is legitimate access. And I had to go to these companies and say, I have news for you about how intimate partner abuse works. In which case, frequently in cases of intimate partner abuse, the partner not only has physical access to the device, but also has the password to the device and can covertly install things on the device without any trouble. And that managed to convince one AV company to classify this stuff as malicious. So the first company that I convinced to come on side was Kaspersky. And Kaspersky not only did a much better job of taking stalkerware seriously, but also put out a special alert so that if you ended up with stalkerware on your phone and they scanned it and found it, you would specifically know that it was stalkerware. And gave the user the option of removing it from their device. So I was very excited about that. And then other AV companies came on board, including Norton LifeLock, now GDocs and a bunch of others. So we're very excited about that. Malwarebytes, and they're also doing a much better job. And one of the things that we have done as a result of this coalition is we've also brought in academic researchers, people who are working directly with survivors of abuse, and also, large domestic abuse support organizations like the National Network to End Domestic Violence. And now we are all working together to stop stalkerware. It's been a really successful coalition.
I absolutely love that. For those that don't know really what is the difference between stalkerware and spyware, or are they the same thing, do you mind sharing a little bit more about that?
Sure. I think that the important difference is not between stalkerware and spyware. There's all kinds of spyware that ends up on people's devices, and it takes all kinds of exciting shapes. But again, the most important thing, the thing that makes stalkerware stalkerware, is that it tracks what is happening on your device. It can be installed by someone else, and it hides from you in order to leave you with the impression that you are not, in fact, being tracked. The difference between stalkerware and what we think of as sort of, nation state spyware, or the spyware that is used sometimes by non-state actors, is that it's commercially available. That you can just go to go to Google and go to your local search engine and type in, how do I spy on my spouse's phone? Or how do I spy on my girlfriend's phone? Or how do I spy on my husband's phone? And you will get an answer. You will get links to a bunch of different tools that purport to be able to do this for you. And that means that you don't have to be a security expert or an IT expert or any kind of expert in order to do this kind of extremely abusive spying. All you need to be able to do is know how to use a search engine, grab the phone of the person that you want to spy on, and install a single file. And then you usually pay a subscription fee to the company for monthly access to the information that comes off of that device.
So it sounds like it's relatively easy to get a hold of, which is really, really scary. So now I have to ask this question, which is, how prevalent is it? Do you have any statistics that you can share of how prevalent stalkerware is right now?
Well, it's actually hard to know because the stalkerware companies do not publish statistics on this. So we can really only draw conclusions based on a few things. I can tell you that the organizations that support victims of domestic abuse survivors have reported that nearly 100% of the survivors that come to them have experienced some form of electronic tracking or abuse, and that includes stalkerware. So in that sense, it is very prevalent in this self-selecting sample. But also to get some idea, a couple of years ago in I'm trying to remember the name of the company that found this. Anyway, a security company found that there were four stalkerware products that had made their way into the Google Play Store and reported it to Google. Google then did a full analysis of their Google Play Store and found four more. So there were, eight different pieces of different stalkerware apps sitting there in the Google Play Store in violation of Google's terms of service, because Google's terms of service do not allow apps that fit the definition of stalkerware to be sold there. And when they removed the eight apps, they also reported how many times they had been downloaded at the time of removal. And the answer was 180,000 downloads. So just eight random stalkerware apps had many, many downloads each. And every one of those downloads is potentially an abuse case. So that certainly indicates that it is prevalent. And not only is stalkerware very popular and prevalent, but even if it wasn't, even if stalkerware was relatively rare, it is linked to some of the worst cases of abuse that have come to be. The cases that are linked to kidnapping, that are linked to physical violence, that are linked to really intense stalking and threats, often those are the cases that involve stalkerware. So it's really part of a whole kind of bundle of abuse.
Well, this is all very scary. So now the other part is, I remember about a year ago, there was an article that came out in a well-known newspaper, mm-hmm. I guess we call it. But basically, in this article, it showed this guy how easy it was for him to stalk his wife. And he was like, see, now you can catch to see whether or not your spouse is cheating on you. And I remember coming across this, and I also saw your tweet about it. And the thing that just grind my gears at that moment was like, how did the editor think that that's okay? So how can we change society to just acknowledge that when you're spying or stalking on your spouse to see whether or not they're being faithful to you, what gives them the right to think that this is a good solution?
Well, I think that there are a couple of different elements at play here. The first is misogyny. Definitely this feeling that you as a partner have a right to control your female partner, which is very disturbing. But I also see stalkerware being used by women sometimes to spy on their male partners. And the reason that they give me is that I need this power in order to even the score. I need this power in order to prove that that, you know, in order to get evidence that my partner is being bad. And what I tell them, both the men and the women who think that this sort of spying is justified, is that covertly spying on your partner's devices is not a thing that leads to abuse. It is abuse in and of itself. This behavior is abusive, even if you don't ever do anything with the information. And even if your partner is abusing you, or your partner has somehow wronged you, or you have suspicions, you should not let their bad behavior turn you into an abuser. It actually makes you a worse person. And also, you are almost certainly breaking the law in a way that opens you up to some litigation and possibly legal possibly law enforcement action. So please don't do that, no matter how justified you feel like you may be at the time. If you feel like your partner is cheating, you're already done. You need to have a talk with your partner, or you need to dump your partner. Getting hard evidence and abusing them in order to get it will not actually change the situation in any way. Your decisions are already have already been made, and they have already been clear. And you don't need to sort of lower yourself to become an abuser and to become a worse person just to convince yourself to do what you already know you need to do, which is to get away from this person.
Exactly. I know that in the hacker community, there's like this ongoing advice, which is if you're going to date anyone in the hacker community, be aware that stalkerware is something very, very common and prevalent. I remember someone sharing this to me at the very beginning when I started InfoSec, and I had no idea actually how prevalent it was until like I would just have random conversations with people in the hacker community, and they'd be like, yeah, I've done it. This person did it to me. And it just seems so common, like as if it's like, oh, this is just a rite of passage when dating. Do you have anything you would like to tell those people that think that this is okay to do?
How many times am I allowed to say fuck in this podcast?
As many times as you like.
Okay. Stand back. So, I think that there's a really serious problem in the security community where we normalize this kind of behavior. And part of that is because as security people, we're used to having root. We have this idea that someone else having access to all of this information is dangerous. Locking bad guys out of devices is my job, or breaking into devices where I should not be is also my job. Surely my having all of the information doesn't make me a bad person. I can be trusted with all of this because I am a security professional. And that is absolutely not the case. That is abuse. The difference between, getting root on a box when you are doing a pen test and you are being paid for it and it is within the scope of work, and installing stalkerware on your partner's phone just to see where they are, or as a joke, or because you think that they are cheating on you and therefore you feel is justified, is tremendous. And I think that one of the things that we really need to do is we need to have a talk within the security community about how this is abusive, and that there is no situation under which this behavior is justified. No matter how angry you are with your partner, no matter how badly you feel that they have behaved, no matter how cute you think the vulnerability is that you're exploiting, and you want to, prove that you're extra super elite, it's still not okay because the act of doing this is abuse.
I love this.
Also, fuck.
There we go. It's also important. It's just always this idea, but I'm the good guy. And it's just like, what makes you determine that yourself? So I have some questions, maybe I don't know if you have answers for, which is there any legal protections for those that do find out that there is stalkerware on their device? Is there any protections at all, any legislation that's in the works that you are aware of at this time?
There's lots of legislation. There are lots of laws that you could potentially be breaking by installing stalkerware on somebody else's device, including the wiretapping statutes, the CFAA, the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. You can be, violating your local state laws against stalking. You may live in the state of California, which actually has an anti-stalkerware law. So yes, you are undoubtedly breaking lots and lots of laws. But the reason why people feel free to do this with impunity is that those laws are almost never brought into play. It is extremely rare for someone to come to law enforcement with their phone and say, I think there's stalkerware on my phone, and have law enforcement take them seriously. It very rarely ends in some sort of prosecution. And this is one of the reasons why inside of the Coalition Against Stalkerware, we have been putting together a training specifically aimed at law enforcement, so that law enforcement knows what to do when somebody comes to them with this stuff and might actually do something about it. So there are sort of two approaches. One is we acknowledge that even though the sort of legal tools are there, that it is extremely difficult to put them into play. And so what we need are not more legal tools. We need more effective law enforcement, and we need more tools that allow people to see that they have stalkerware on their devices, so that they don't even have to get law enforcement involved. They don't have to get the courts involved. They can just like go and save themselves. But also, we need to change the norm. We need to change the norm that this sort of behavior is okay. And I think that's really where we can do the most good. I very frequently get asked, is there a law? Do we need a law? Is a law going to fix our problem? And a law is not going to fix our problem. This is not a problem that is going to be fixed through additional legislation. This is a problem that can only be fixed if we fix ourselves and each other.
That's a really good point you made. I do know that there are certain people that in my circle, at one point, they try to go to law enforcement to share what's going on with them, and they thought that they were not mentally okay, or they were making this up, or they just basically didn't follow up because they didn't know what to do with it. So they just kind of like ignore the case. And I know that that's something that you probably have heard as well.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why we're putting this training together. And it's because I don't ever want to hear someone say, I went to law enforcement and I got gaslit, or I got ignored, or they simply told me that they didn't know what to do. I want to make sure that every member of law enforcement has the training and has the resources to at least recognize stalkerware when they see it, and have some idea of how it should be properly investigated. Because I'm really sick of hearing excuses for not doing it.
Yeah. Do you mind sharing a little bit more about how victims are dealing with this? I know that emotionally it definitely takes a toll, but I can also imagine physically it may take a toll as well. Do you mind sharing a little bit about how victims deal with this and what are the resources out there for them when they're overcoming stalkerware?
Well, to begin with, one of the great steps forward that we have made is that now the AV industry does a much better job of recognizing stalkerware. So if you install an AV product on your Android phone or your Windows desktop machine, you are much more likely to have it recognize stalkerware when it is there and give you the option of removing it. Again, this is always an option, but it does not happen automatically. And one of the reasons for this is because it is really important for the survivor to have the choice. And a survivor may not always want to remove the stalkerware because it might tip their abuser off to the fact that they're onto them. And it might enrage their abuser so much that their abuser may escalate to violence or indeed further violence than they have already engaged in. So I try to encourage a survivor-centric approach. Yes, absolutely. Survivors come to me and they are traumatized. It is absolutely terrifying to be surveilled and to not understand the scope of the surveillance, to not understand what it is that your abuser can and cannot see and can and cannot control. Because when you don't understand the scope of the surveillance feels omniscient and omnipotent, and then you are powerless against your abuser. One of the things that that stalkerware detection does for survivors, even if you don't remove the stalkerware from your device, is it helps you understand how your abuser is tracking you and what they're capable of seeing and what they're not capable of seeing. For example, if you have stalkerware installed on your phone and you don't want your stalker to know physically where you are, you might leave your phone behind somewhere, and you are empowered to do that. You can create these sort of bubbles of privacy or security for yourself that you could not otherwise. So even if you don't get rid of the stalkerware, knowing how it works and knowing that it's there is actually really empowering for survivors, and often gives them the space that they need in order to get away from their abuser.
So what are some ways that every single person right now who's listening to this can protect themselves from stalkerware?
Well, first and foremost, I think that that people should definitely not share their passwords with their partners. Having said that, that is not always advice that people are able to follow. When people are in abusive relationships, they are often coerced into giving up the passwords for their devices or the passwords for their various accounts. So they don't always have a choice. Furthermore, I think it's really important for all of us to really develop some more intelligence around the dynamics of abuse, and to sort of see it coming and, you know, stop it before it gets there. Because abusers don't show up with a great big sign across their head saying, like, "Hi, I'm an abuser, let's enter into a relationship." Abusers are charming. Abusers are kind. Abusers will, like, lull you into a sense of security. Often abusive relationships begin with a period of what is called love bombing, where the abuser is especially wonderful to you and tells you that you are the best person in the world. And that's a really powerful drug. That is a message that we all want to hear from somebody. And so the dynamics of abuse are really what comes later. When that behavior stops and the sort of controlling behavior begins, and being alert to and, you know, kind of informed about what that controlling behavior looks like is by far one of the most effective things that we can do in order to avoid avoid abuse, including stalkerware.
Yeah, it's always important to just keep reiterating over and over that stalkerware is one of those things that, you know, just stalking itself is scary because person knows where you are at all times, who you're with. But knowing the inside of what is going on internally with you, that's something that they don't have control over ever, but now they have a glimpse of it.
I think it's also really important to, you know, really to call people out and to tell them that that abuse is not okay, and that if you are an abuser, people will talk to one another, and they will let other people know, and make it harder for you to abuse future victims. And I think that that is another thing that we can really do in order to cut down on the amount of abuse that we see in the world.
So I know sometimes it's hard for people to recognize that they may have Stockware on their device. Sometimes it's on their device for quite some time until they figure it out. But what are some of the warning signs that people can kind of see that maybe they should consider that they need to look into something?
Well, I mean, there are a couple of indicators. Often, you know, it will be your abuser indicating that they know something about your conversations, that they know something about your location, or, you know, sending you a picture, which is from your phone. So sometimes they're really overt about it. But even if you suspect that this is a problem, you can simply download, AV onto your Android and run a scan and see if it is there. And the chances that they will, you know, detect the Stockware on your device is fairly high. If you have an iPhone, as you well know, the iPhone ecosystem is such that third-party AV does not exist for it. However, there is a guide to dealing with the, you know, sort of most common ways in which abusers get information off of your phone, which was written by Apple's security team, and which I strongly recommend, and whose name escapes me right now because it has like an extremely boring name. It's like a manual for, you know, securing your device in cases of physical abuse or something like that. So I recommend looking it up real quick because I feel very bad about forgetting exactly what it's called. But yeah, that is another thing that you can do. I also strongly recommend that before you assume Stockware, start by assuming account compromise, because account compromise is considerably more common than Stockware. Compromising accounts is very, very easy, and installing Stockware is slightly more difficult, and abusers tend to do the thing which is easiest. So if you are worried about the security of your devices or the security of your accounts, you should start by changing all of your passwords and turning on the highest level of 2FA that you are comfortable with. And if the indicators of a security breach persist, then go looking for Stockware.
All right. And then I have two other questions for you. Now, these questions are about how individuals can get involved with the Coalition Against Stockware. So the first question I have is, how can security companies get involved? How can they help you fight the fight?
So we have contact information via email on our website at the Coalition Against Stockware. We are also on Twitter as I think Stop Stockware, and you can reach out to us directly and apply for membership. We have upwards of 40 members now, which I'm very excited about, many of which are security companies, and those security companies engage in a lot of information sharing, which is part of how AV detection of Stockware has gotten so much better over the last couple of years.
Excellent. And now, how can everyday people get involved with the Coalition Against Stockware?
Well, the Coalition Against Stockware does include some individuals and individual researchers. So again, you can reach out directly via email and apply for membership.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Eva, for sharing about Stockware. And for everyone, go ahead and check out stopstockware.org. Thank you so much, Eva, once again for being with me. And thank you so much for actually being my first guest on the Change Making podcast. And I know that you'll definitely get some people contacting you, wanting to learn more and trying to help. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Change Making Podcast with Chloe Mestaghi. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.